Opening narration.
Akhotra Foundation presents the Akhotra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akhotra AI.
Introduction.
Welcome, deeply curious listeners, to the Akhotra Dialogue. Today, we're diving into a question that, well, pretty much defines the human experience, doesn't it? Who am I?
It really does. It's this lifelong quest shaping everything, our choices, relationships, how we see the world.
Exactly. And our guide for this deep dive today, it's Barack Obama, but specifically through his really personal memoir, Dreams from My Father.
That's right. And what's so fascinating is, you know, he wrote this back in 1995. This was long before anyone thought of him as President Obama or even Senator Obama.
Right. It wasn't a political book.
Not at all. It's incredibly raw, very introspective. It's all about figuring out identity, you know, wrestling with race, family, and that feeling of trying to belong somewhere. And his background is just so unique, it kind of forces the issue. You've got the Kenyan father he barely knew, his white American mother growing up in Hawaii, then Indonesia. That whole mix is the engine driving the story.
So our mission today is really to unpack the core insights from the book. We want to understand his journey trying to reconcile these really different worlds and build a coherent sense of self.
Yeah, and hopefully offer you, the listener, some valuable takeaways. It's about seeing how someone navigates that complexity, which, let's face it, resonates with pretty much everyone trying to figure out their own place.
The chronological journey.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning, the formative years.
Yeah.
Where does this journey kick off?
Well, mostly in Hawaii. He's raised primarily by his white mother, Ann Dunham, and her parents, Stanley and Madeline Dunham. Gramps and Toot, he called them.
Right.
And it sounds like a loving home, definitely intellectually stimulating, progressive even. But he was always sort of aware that he looked different, that his story wasn't quite like the kids around him. He didn't neatly fit.
That sense of being different and hovering over all of this, even though he wasn't aware, was his father, Barack Obama Sr., this myth of the father, as you called it. How did that absence become such a powerful force?
It's interesting, isn't it? Sometimes absence is louder than presence. His mother, Anne, painted these, well, often quite heroic pictures of his father. Brilliant, ambitious, this figure from Kenya.
Idealized.
Very much so, it seems. But those stories, combined with the fact that the man just wasn't there, left this huge void. And it wasn't just empty space. It was filled with questions, a deep longing, and this real drive to understand that missing piece of himself. It became like a guiding question for his whole life, really.
And there's that pivotal moment, the Life magazine incident he writes about. That sounds like a real jarring awakening to race.
Oh, absolutely jarring. It wasn't just seeing a picture. It was this sudden, painful realization of how the world sees race and how that external view can actually, you know, wound you internally. He talks about encountering this idea of racial self-hatred even before he could fully grasp the concept.
Wow, that's heavy for a kid.
Definitely. It kind of shatters that childhood innocence. And then later, they move to Indonesia. He's living with his mother and his Indonesian stepfather, Lolo Satoro. Again, he's an outsider, this time more culturally.
Right.
But what's really key here is his mother. Anne was apparently very deliberate. She tutored him constantly in American history, the civil rights movement.
While they were in Indonesia.
Yeah. It wasn't just about fact. She was actively trying to anchor him in his American identity, making sure he understood that part of his heritage, even thousands of miles away.
Then there's that brief meeting with his father when he was 10. You described it as unsettling. How did that encounter affect things?
Well, it seems like it complicated things even more. His father came across as, you know, charming, smart, but also quite distant emotionally. For a boy who'd built up this whole myth, the reality was maybe both exciting and a letdown. It didn't answer the questions. It just made them deeper, intensified that need to figure out the real man behind myth and, you know, figure out himself in relation to that.
Makes sense. And this carries into his teenage years back in Hawaii, living with his grandparents again. He talks about feeling alienated, right? Rebellion, searching.
Yeah, definitely. He's back in Hawaii, one of only a handful of black kids at his pretty prestigious school. And he kind of acts out drinking, smoking pot, sort of checking out academically.
Trying to fit in or maybe trying not to?
Probably a bit of both. But it wasn't just mindless rebellion. He was also searching. He starts reading black authors Malcolm X, W.E.B. Du Bois, trying to find answers, trying to understand what being black in America even meant.
So he's trying to piece together this identity from all these fragments, the absent father myth, the experience of race, different cultures, these books. That feeling of being an outsider trying to make sense of it all, That's pretty universal, isn't it?
Absolutely. It sets up the core conflict perfectly. How do you build a whole self when you're starting with such disparate, sometimes conflicting pieces?
Okay, so he's wrestling with all this. Then comes college, and eventually the news of his father's death. How did that change things? You said it solidified his resolve.
It seems like it was a real turning point. The intellectual searching he'd done in college suddenly became much more urgent, more personal. His father's death, paradoxically, really pushed him.
Pushed him where?
Towards making a very conscious choice. He decided he needed to connect with his Black identity not just as, like, a concept or heritage, but as a lived reality, a political and social commitment.
Mm.
He wanted to understand it from the inside out.
Which leads him to Chicago. Right, Chicago. Why community organizing on the South Side?
Yeah.
That feels like a very specific, deliberate move.
It was completely deliberate. He lands on the South Side as a community organizer, full of idealism maybe, but not much practical experience. It was a huge leap from academia to the, you know, the day-to-day grind of organizing.
Must have been a shock. Confronting skepticism, the slow pace of change.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. He talks about trying to organize tenants, register voters, all that groundwork. But the biggest lessons weren't about strategy. They were about people. He learned how crucial it was to just listen. Yeah. Truly listen. Not just waiting to talk, but hearing people's stories, understanding their struggles, finding that common ground. He even quotes himself saying something like, I realized that who I was no longer just a matter of intellect. I had been taught to listen. It was about shifting from thinking about it to actually doing it, experiencing it.
And part of that experience was immersing himself in the Black church, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trinity United Church of Christ, Reverend Jeremiah Wright. How did that fit in?
That became hugely important. Though the church wasn't just about faith, though that became significant too. It offered community, a real tangible community, and a sense of history.
History.
Yeah, like a connection to generations of Black Americans who had found strength, joy, purpose within the church, especially through tough times. It gave him that continuity, that connection to a collective story he'd been missing. Finding his place in that tradition was a big step towards feeling like he belonged.
So it's this move from an intellectual search to, like, rolling up his sleeves and committing to a community. It really shows that belonging isn't just something you inherit. Sometimes you have to earn it through, well, through showing up and doing the work.
Exactly. It's about active participation, shared struggle. That really resonates, I think, for anyone trying to find their purpose or make meaningful connections. It involves humility, service.
Okay, so after Chicago, before he heads off to Harvard Law, he takes this incredibly significant trip to Kenya. This feels like the culmination of that lifelong quest regarding his father.
It absolutely is. It's the pilgrimage, right? But to finally confront the reality behind the myth. He gets to Nairobi, and his half-sister, Ama, meets him. She sounds amazing, strong, smart.
She becomes his guide.
His guide, yeah, but also his challenger. She doesn't let him hold on to his romanticized ideas about Africa or their father. She pushes him to see the real picture, the good and the bad, without the American filter.
And then he meets the rest of the family. His Luo relatives, his step-grandmother, granny.
Right, this huge, sprawling family. And he just gets flooded with stories, countless anecdotes, memories, perspectives on his father from people who actually knew him, grew up with him.
So this is where the myth really starts to crumble.
Completely. The idealized hero dad gets replaced by this incredibly complex, brilliant, but deeply flawed man.
Flawed how?
Well, stories of arrogance, a struggle with alcohol, major disappointments, both personally and politically. It sounds like he was quite a tragic figure in many ways. Imagine carrying that idealized image your whole life and then facing that reality. It must have been earth-shattering.
Yeah, that moment we all face, I guess, when our parents become human, flawed, complicated humans. So the climax of this Kenya trip is visiting his father's grave and his grandfather's grave in Alego.
That moment by the graveside, it feels like the emotional core of the book. It's where the reconciliation happens.
Reconciliation.
Yeah. Not about choosing, am I American or African, Black or white, but about integrating all of it, accepting the whole complicated inheritance. He says something really powerful, like, the pain I felt was my father's pain, their struggle, my birthright. It's about claiming the entirety of his story, the difficult parts included.
Wow. That's a powerful place to arrive at, accepting the whole picture, not just the convenient parts.
Core philosophy and values.
So stepping back from the timeline, what are the big underlying ideas? What's the core philosophy driving this whole journey in dreams from my father?
I think the biggest one is that identity isn't fixed. It's not something you're just handed. It's an active, lifelong process. You're constantly building it.
Like a construction project.
Exactly. You're the architect, the builder,
yeah.
maybe sometimes the demolition crew, too.
Yeah.
Obama's whole story shows him actively trying to forge who he is piece by piece. It's not passive inheritance. He talks about learning to slip back and forth between my black and white worlds, hoping they'd eventually cohere. Wholeness came from putting them together, not picking one over the other.
And what about race? It's obviously central.
Right. The book really explores race and inheritance, not just as biology, but as this tangle of stories, expectations, history. Society projects narratives onto you based on race, and there's this constant internal struggle to define yourself against or within those projections.
It's about navigating those external labels while finding your internal truth.
Precisely. And tied to that is the whole theme of the myth of the father and the reality of forgiveness. He had to dismantle that idealized image of his father to understand the real flawed man. And forgiving those flaws, understanding them, was crucial for his own freedom. He couldn't move forward until he let go of that impossible standard.
Makes sense. You can't live up to a myth.
Nope. Then there's the power and challenge of community. His time in Chicago especially shows how much our identity gets shaped by the groups we belong to. But also, that belonging often requires real commitment, shared struggle. It's earned. Like he found in the church that sense of continuity, of shared memory.
Right, the promise of continuity.
Yeah. And all of this ultimately points towards reconciliation as a path to wholeness. Reconciling black and white, American and African, the myth and the reality of his father. It's about integrating all these parts. Getting engaged to Michelle at the end feels like a symbol of that building his own future based on that integrated self.
And even early on, you see glimmers of what would later be called the audacity of hope.
Right.
Finding hope even amidst the struggles of community organizing.
Definitely. It's a hope born from seeing resilience, from small victories, not from ignoring the difficulties. And one more thing, the role of storytelling. Obama is actively making sense of his life by telling the story. He's taking control of his narrative to understand himself.
So he's not just living it, he's shaping it through the telling.
Three pivotal turning points.
Okay, looking back at that whole journey, can we pinpoint maybe three moments that were truly pivotal, like real turning points that dramatically shifted his path?
Absolutely. I think the first one has to be that early awakening to race, probably crystallized by that Life magazine incident we talked about.
Right, the moment innocence was lost.
Exactly. It wasn't just an observation. It was this deeply felt, almost visceral understanding that race mattered, that it carried weight, pain, and complex social meaning. It fundamentally changed how he saw himself and the world, setting him on that conscious path of trying to understand what being black meant, both for him and in America. It was the start of the explicit quest.
Okay, so that's one. What's the second?
I'd say the conscious commitment to community in Chicago. After college and his father's death, deciding to become a community organizer wasn't just a job choice.
It was more than that.
Oh, much more. It was a deliberate pivot away from purely intellectual exploration toward lived experience. It was choosing to immerse himself in the black community, to learn from the ground up, to connect his personal search for identity with a larger social and political struggle. That decision to listen, to serve, to engage directly with the complexities of urban life that profoundly shaped his understanding of purpose, power, and belonging. It wasn't theoretical anymore.
It grounded his search in reality.
Okay.
And the third turning point.
It has to be the journey to Kenya and confronting the father's reality. Going there, meeting Oma, hearing all those family stories, and finally visiting the graves. That trip forced the deconstruction of the myth he'd lived with for so long.
The shift from myth to man.
Precisely. And in doing so, it allowed for that profound reconciliation we discussed. Accepting the flawed, complex, tragic reality of his father enabled him to finally integrate all the pieces of his heritage without needing to choose or reject parts of it. It was about embracing the whole messy, beautiful, painful truth of his origins. That acceptance, that integration, feels like the key that unlocked his ability to move forward into his own future, whole.
Human lessons and reflection.
So when we think about his story, what are the big human lessons here? How does his struggle, his journey, connect with experiences that, you know, we all face?
Well, first off, it's a powerful reminder that figuring out who you are is messy, ongoing work. Nobody gets a neat little instruction manual for their identity.
Definitely not.
We all grapple with different parts of ourselves. Family history, cultural background, personal experiences, societal labels. His story shows that embracing that complexity, rather than fighting it or trying to simplify it, is where real strength lies. It's okay not to fit neatly into boxes.
That's comforting, actually. What else?
The importance of connecting with your roots, but not being defined solely by them. He had to understand his father's story, his Kenyan heritage, his mother's background, but ultimately he had to choose how to weave those threads into his own narrative.
The idea of conscious inheritance again?
Exactly. We can learn from our past, acknowledge it, even forgive parts of it without being tracked by it. We get to decide what legacy means for us. That's incredibly empowering, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
And also, the profound value of community and shared struggle. His time organizing showed him and shows us that purpose often comes not from individual achievement alone, but from connecting with others, listening to their stories, and working towards something bigger than yourself, even when it's hard.
That search for meaning through connection?
Uh-huh. And finally, maybe the power of empathy and reconciliation. Learning to understand perspectives different from our own, whether it's across cultures like he did, or even just understanding the flaws in people we love like his father, that ability to reconcile different truths is key to personal peace and, honestly, to bridging divides in the wider world.
Three final takeaways.
Okay, so if we had to boil this deep dive down to three core takeaways for our listeners, what would they be? Let's start with an emotional insight.
I think the most powerful emotional insight is the liberation that comes from embracing your whole complex story, flaws and all. Finding peace isn't about achieving perfection or resolving every contradiction, but about accepting the multifaceted, sometimes messy, reality of your own history and identity. Forgiving the past, forgiving others, forgiving yourself, that's where emotional wholeness begins.
Accepting the messiness. I like that. What about an intellectual insight?
The key intellectual insight for me is that identity is actively constructed, not passively received. It's a product of conscious choices, experiences, the stories we tell ourselves, and the communities we engage with. Understanding this shifts our perspective from feeling determined by our background to recognizing our agency in shaping who we become. It's a dynamic process.
Right. Puts the power back in our hands, in a way. And finally, a universal, practical life lesson.
The most universal insight has to be the enduring power of listening, empathy, and seeking common ground. Whether it's in community work like Obama's and our families, or just navigating daily life, the ability to genuinely hear others, understand different perspectives, and find shared humanity across differences is not just a skill. It's fundamental to building connections, solving problems, and ultimately creating a more hopeful future. It starts with listening.
Closing narration.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.